It's time to laugh, learn, and take your photography to the next level with your favorite cowgirls with cameras, Kara, Kim, and Phyllis.
Welcome to the Cowgirls with Cameras podcast. I'm Kim Beer with Kim Beer Photography and Be More Business.
I'm Kara with Fast Horse Photography.
And I'm Phyllis with Phyllis Burchett Photo. Hello and good morning and nice to see y'all.
Hi. Good to see you too.
Long time, no see.
Yeah. So what y'all been up to? Wow. Gosh, I feel like I haven't talked in a while.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've been on a massive adventure. I got
you
to
have,
go see.
But in like a whirlwind because you did it so yes. freaking fast.
Tell us more.
I know. I went to British Columbia. I got to go see. I have never been to the Pacific Northwest.
Was it pretty? Did you enjoy it?
I did. When I left, Nick told me, he goes, it's so pretty. You're going to think it's spectacular. And I'm like, yeah, I've been a lot of places.
I keep saying we need to do an event there.
BC and Alberta are like, they're
yes.
right up there.
Well, yeah. the entire trip up was all mountain driving all of the way up. And it just was very, very pretty. And I was up to photograph my client, Melissa Pierce, who was touched by a horse. I was up there to photograph her new home, which is her new central location for her certification program, which I'm certified through and help her market. And so I got to go up and document that. And I have to say her horses are exceedingly happy there. Like it is so ideally set up for what she does. And she's nestled in this very pretty little valley of massive pine trees and a lot of cottonwoods. And then the cottonwoods are shedding their little cottons right now. And so in a lot of the photos, it's very dreamy because there's like little cotton motes floating around. And so, yeah, I flew up on Monday and I was home last night. Well, technically this morning. So today is a Friday for us here. So it was 1:30 in the morning before I got back here due to some weather in Denver. But yeah, it was 4 days and that was a lot. I drove like 14 hours and also flew from Missouri all of the way up to Spokane and then 14 hours of driving round trip.
Did you shoot all day at Melissa's too? Like shoot all day?
I did. I did the thing that we try to train people how to do in a lot of our workshops to say when you only have a limited amount of time, you have to know how to shoot in conditions that are not ideal. And I was sold on the fact that it was going to be overcast because that's what all of the weather apps said. And of course, it turned out to be beautifully sunny for part of the day. And so I had to shoot in that because I didn't have any time. There was
life happens in the middle of the day as well. I mean, I've definitely been
there. Is her place really pretty?
It is amazingly beautiful. And like I said, she's nestled in a valley. And it was so funny because her horses are, they're a little on the chunky side. They're gypsies. So they're
Disney princess horses.
They're Disney princess horses kind of looking. And it's so funny. She has a quarter horse and the quarter horse is looking like the gypsies. They brought him out for me to photograph. And I'm like, he's been living with the gypsies too long because he's starting to look like one. But I told her she has this beautiful river out back. And, you know, of course, we've been playing in the water in Montana, right? So I'm like, I think what you need to do is like get your whole herd of gypsies together and you need to run them across that river for me so I can photograph that. And she's like, well, first of all, they don't run anywhere. I don't know. You know, I know you guys have photographed show gypsies, but these horses do like psychotherapy with people and they don't run. So I had two assistants that were provided for me to get the gypsies to like move. And we figure if we get one pass at a gallop, we have succeeded. So I wore out two other people during this shoot, but it was a lot of fun and I had a blast.
Awesome.
And Melissa is super happy up there and it is very, very pretty. And I have to say, the Pacific Northwest definitely won me over. I will be back.
I know. We need to do an event there.
We definitely need to do an event there. It is so pretty.
Yeah.
So pretty.
Awesome. Well, we are in full summer mode here. So this is the first full week of summer from school, summer vacation. So my son has been home. And he's been very busy. He's been a social butterfly. I'm talking like midweek sleepovers. We have a birthday party today he's going to. And then yesterday we went and saw the opening of, there's this TV show that he loves called Digital Circus. And so we went and saw the movie, The Digital Circus, and we've been going nonstop. Anyway, we leave tomorrow for summer camp in North Carolina. So we'll be heading up that way where he'll spend 3 weeks, which is, I'm feeling a little more confident about it this year than I was last year when he did it, but it's still very hard for me to be away from him because he's my only child. And then we're going to work from North Carolina for a week. So next week, I'll be in North Carolina all week, which I'm looking forward to. It's going to be nice up there. A little change from the heat and humidity down here in Florida. With that being said, it's been crazy getting ready for everything. So what about you, Phyllis? What have you been up to?
Oh, I was just going to say how much I love that area you're going to, Brevard and up in Asheville, that whole area. So I'm jealous. Well, gosh, I've between getting home from Montana and trying to get a lot of stuff done while I'm home because I'm going to have a short window coming home from my next trip before my next trip. So, and plus I'm hosting a big birthday party for my sister this weekend. I'll have about 25 people at the house, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for me, it's a lot. So yeah, I have had a little bit of anxiety over that, just trying to get everything done. And she reminded me that they're all friends that we've known and loved for years and that nothing has to be perfect. And I'm like, you know, you're right. I don't have to have the perfect house and yard, although my yard is pretty perfect right now, let me tell you.
I think if you just have booze and good food, you're good. Like, you're totally good.
Get them drunk enough, they don't notice the details.
That's what we're going to have. So, yeah, once I'm over tomorrow, then things will calm down. But then I leave for Iceland I leave for Iceland a week from today. So yeah, and I'm looking forward to that because I've got a really great group of clients coming with me that'll join me again for my 14th trip to Iceland. So yeah, and then I come home and I leave again in a week and a half.
For Dryhead, right?
Well, for Montana, yeah.
Oh, Montana, and yeah. Then Dryhead, yeah.
Yeah. I'm off to Wyoming next week. This has been crazy travel for all of us.
So we're all going to be basically gone next.
Yeah, I'm at Powderhorn.
Oh, boy.
I have a couple of shoots planned ahead of Powderhorn, so I leave on Tuesday. I'm not home for long, and then it's on the road.
Already that soon. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Too bad we can't afford to hire someone to just hold the fort down so we can just do all this fun travel stuff.
I sure do miss Powderhorn, though. I miss going.
I know. Yeah. I hate that I didn't get to go again this year. I'm thinking maybe next year.
Well, as long as it's in June, I'll never get to go. So y'all planned that perfectly.
It wasn't our plan. But I'm going to tell you, I wished you were coming and it was a time you could come. But I also am looking forward to baby horses.
I know why you want me to come.
Yeah.
I want baby horses. And I'm very much looking forward to foals because I don't have foals anymore. I don't get to be around baby horses, and they keep teasing me with it. If you follow their Facebook page, they're taking photos of all of the babies that are being born. And so I'm like, I'm going to get to meet that baby here in just a few days. I get to meet the babies. So
cute.
I'm so excited to meet babies.
See, that's one thing I will get in Iceland is lots of babies. So, yeah.
Lots of babies. So, lots of full time.
Lots of furry, long-haired, long mane and tail moms and furry babies.
I've been photographing babies since April.
Yeah, you have. And I haven't even seen one all year. So,
I've had lots of little cuties.
Which is so different than my past life. So, by my past life, I would have already seen probably 50 head of babies already. So,
yeah.
It's weird when you get out of it, when there's no longer babies that are being born in your ranch or land or proximity. It becomes this very fun thing to do is to see the baby horses. So, all right. Are we ready to move on to our episode? Because I'm sure people are really thrilled by all of our yammering about all the things we're up to. So we are doing, I thought this for a minute, I about read off of the thing, 101 editing styles to bring out the soul of the ranch. But actually, this is episode 101. And I'm thinking I am totally unprepared because I did not bring my 33.5 things for editing styles to bring out the soul of the ranch.
Imagine if we just sat here and listed off the whole episode, 101 editing styles.
So I am super glad that you guys are not going to have to sit through 101 editing styles.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. Yeah.
We have three topics. So Phyllis is going to start us off today by talking about editing for place, that is a super important piece of things. Kara is going to give us some wisdom around timeless versus trending. And then I'm going to talk about the interesting thing of not removing faults and flaws and editing without removing the spice of life. So yeah, we're going to get into the topic. All right, Phyllis, you're up.
All right, here I go. Two times I'm going first. I must be getting brave. Okay, so when we talk about the sense of place in Western photography, I think we're really talking about helping the viewer really feel the land, even the weather, the history of the location, and of course, the lifestyle. Editing should reinforce the environment and atmosphere that made the image feel compelling in the first place. For me, what I like to do is to kind of let, if possible, to kind of let the land tell you how to edit. One of the biggest mistakes I think photographers make is applying the same preset to every image, regardless of where it was made. For instance, and we kind of talked about this, or Kim, you did a little bit in our last episode, but a Wyoming cattle ranch shouldn't necessarily be edited the same way as a South Texas ranch, and neither should look like a mountain ranch in Montana. Every place has its own visual language. The landscape itself becomes part of the story, and your editing choices should reinforce that story rather than overpower it. So when I sit down to edit, I ask myself, what did this place feel like? Not so much what it looked like, but what it felt like. Was it dusty and hot? Was it cold and windy? Was it lush and green like the one we just went to? The goal is to preserve the character of the ranch and the experience of being there. A really important thing to do is to let the light guide you. Soft morning light on a mountain ranch creates a completely different mood than hard midday sun during a branding. But really try to embrace the light that existed in that very moment. Sometimes you don't have a choice, like Kim found out.
Yeah,
you just don't have a choice. Yeah. As we all find out every time we go to shoot, sometimes we don't have a choice. We have to take what's given to us. Sometimes one of the best made plans don't always work out.
Also, life happens in the middle of the day too, not just at sunrise and sunset. And it deserves documentation.
Sure,
it does.
It might not be the prettiest light to work in all the time, but like, I've got some cool stuff in harsh light, you know? Like, get out there and just do it. Just do it.
We're learning to work around that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I keep going back to that quote that I don't even know what photographer said that, but basically, you know, golden hour is easy light. It's easy. It does not challenge you because it's super easy to get a good photo in that light. But part of the fun of being a photographer is shooting when the light isn't that. The challenge is part of the journey. So, yeah.
The challenge is part of the fun. If it wasn't for that challenge, then everybody would be doing this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Weather can be one of the strongest storytellers, I think, in photography. And I love any time I get to shoot in weather. I think that's why we're always so excited to have dust, snow, fog, rain, and or wind. Hopefully not all at once, but yes.
I don't know. I like that.
Well, I've had all of these except for the dust in Iceland all at one time, but they all add atmosphere to the image, helping it tell the story. In seasons really matter because they help define a sense of place. They become another character in the photograph. When viewers can almost feel the crisp fall air on their face or smell the dust kicked up by livestock or hear the distant cattle, they experience the peace and solitude of the landscape. You have created more than image. You've created atmosphere. So think about it like this. The subject equals what the photo is about, but the atmosphere equals what the photo feels like. Sometimes the soul of the ranch lives in subtlety too, though, like a pale sky. I love the tall, soft grasses blowing in the wind, the muted colors, even a distant mountain range fading into the haze. Not every landscape needs to be dramatic, even though I think those, for me, those still are kind of dramatic. Some just need to be quiet and still. The best edits don't call attention to themselves. They quietly support the story, preserve the ranch's authenticity, and help the viewer feel like they have been transported to that place and time.
Awesome.
I didn't get real technical with any of that, so.
That's okay. I'm going to talk about timeless versus trendy, which I think is such a fun topic. So I'm kind of excited to talk about it. Because I was thinking about I did this rabbit hole about like trends over like a little while, like the last several years. I was thinking about some of the trends that have like come through in photography and just laughing because I have you know, I've tried a bunch of them out, and I think back to myself, like, if I were to go back 10 years on like my Instagram timeline, like what that might look like. So I just want to, first of all, tell people there is not anything wrong with trying out new trends and experimenting with your editing. I think that you actually should do all of those things. And like I said, have fun while doing it. But I also think we have to think about the longevity of our work and ask ourselves if what we're creating is still going to feel good and strong, and we're going to be proud of it a few years down the road. Especially, this I think is so important, if the work is going to be hanging in a client's home somewhere. I think you have to think about these things. And like, think about how many times you've gone to your grandma's house, or you've gone to a friend's house and you've seen like an old picture on the wall. And is that a picture that you can say, yeah, that picture is definitely like, based on that editing style, that's from like, you know, the early 2000s, or that's from, you know what I mean? Like, there's a time frame you can attach to it. And it doesn't always have to do with the subject and what they're wearing and those indicators. Like, sometimes it's literally the editing style. So I pulled a couple examples of things that like popped into my brain. So a few examples of editing styles that I feel really had their moment. They had their moment, but they can today date a photographer's work if they're not careful. And the first thing that popped into my head was selective color. It's kind of like that classic black and white image, and then like one particular thing is left in color. Cool to do. You should know how to do it. Absolutely. But it is something that could date an image today, right? Because you don't see a lot of that. But there was a time period where that was like everything. And I'll talk about how that bites you in the ass later in a second. The second one that I was super guilty of when I first started as a photographer was a very super heavy vignette. I had like a super heavy vignette on everything because drawing the focus, baby, I had to pull that focus in. And I also remember a time when everyone was doing the really heavy HDR and everything was all crunchy and literally you could see every pore on your clients' faces. You know, like that whole scene when it was like just a little, it was just a lot. I'm also remembering a time when it was like sepia everything, like the sepia filter went on everything. Sepia is beautiful. It should definitely still not disappear from the planet. It's appropriate sometimes, but there was a time when we were doing sepia everything. One of the more recent trends that I was thinking of is the orange skin and teal shadows and everything brown and desaturated, as if like greens and blues don't exist out in the West, like that doesn't happen. So like thinking about some of these things that could be, or we've done in the past with our images, I have done every single one of them. I'm raising my hand right now. This is not me saying people don't do this or people who are doing this. I'm saying I've done all of these. I'm guilty. And they were cool for a while. And it was a lot of fun. And I learned how to play with it. You should too. If you don't know how to do an HDR image, go play with it. If you don't know how to do a vignette, go play with it. If you don't know how to do selective color, it's something you should know how to do, right? There's a lot of other things on my list, but I'm going to skip through those. What I'm trying to get across is just have fun with the trends, and that every era has an editing trend that really feels fresh and new and exciting at the time. But we do have to think about, how are these images going to look years later? I know I can look back on that Instagram timeline, I've already said, from 10 years ago, and I can certainly question some of my editing choices then. We all can. We're all guilty of it. So trends can be fun. They can inspire us, they can teach us and help us experiment, but we really need to remember that a trend shouldn't inspire our entire body of work unless we're okay with our work becoming dated really fast. I know Phyllis just talked about, you know, taking an edit route that supports the details of an image and that tells a story. The edit should not be the main character. If you're looking at an image and people are like, oh, what did they do to this image? Or I wonder what they did to that image to make that happen. Or is that really what color the grasses were or their skin was? Then that is when you're making your edit the main character. And that's a problem. Like, your subject matter should be the main character. And I do think it's really important that we keep things somewhat believable. Like, skin tone should look human. Horses should look their actual color, because that's important to horse people, right? And I can't tell you, if I mess up a skin tone, my private clients are going to tell me, like, I look too light colored, or I look too orange, or I look too, like, they're going to tell you if their skin color's not right. So trying to do humans justice and horses justice is really important. And I talk about this all the time. I will always come back to asking the question, what is the intended purpose of the image? Like, where is this image going to live later? If it's on social media, have fun, go with the trend, because that's what's happening online right now. And that's the thing to do. It's totally appropriate. It also is not going to live forever. It's going to be gone in a blip because it's on your timeline. People are going to see it once and it's going to move on. But if the image is for like a large wall print, it's for a client's album, maybe it's for a branding shoot for a client, a magazine feature, it's for your portfolio, it's for a big family archive or a big family wall gallery, it's going to have a lifespan that could potentially come back and haunt you later. And I say that with experience and as someone who has been haunted by my past editing choices. One example is a client's website. So like, several years ago, I created a bunch of images for a client's website, and we went with a just kind of that desaturated look. So a few years later, they came back to me and they wanted new images for their website. They wanted to refresh them, but they wanted to keep the same color scheme and everything the same. So I found myself having to go back and like recreate the old style that I used that I just don't use anymore, and having to recreate that for them to make that happen. And it's just, to me, I was trying to explain to them it might be time for a fresh look, but they were set in their ways and they wanted what I had created for them before. Another example is I did senior portraits for a high school senior several years ago, and we did a selective color edit on one of their images, and they loved it and they bought it and it was awesome. So here I am 5 years later, and they want to match that portrait with another image of their new child that is graduating with a selective color edit. So I find myself having to make editing choices that I wouldn't make anymore to like make the client happy because of a decision I made 5 years ago. So think about that. Is this something you're going to want to do in 5 years or 10 years when your client comes back to you? You're going to have to live with those choices. I will also say on the flip side of that, I have had stock images from at least 10 years ago that still license today because in terms of editing, they look like they could have been taken last week. Like very clean edits, very simple edits, they could have been taken last week. So thinking about the longevity and how long those images are going to live and be useful and be working out in the world for you, that is something to think about when you're making editing choices. So I'm just going to end with that. Have fun with your editing trends, experiment with them, learn from them, know how to do them and how they can apply to work throughout your lifetime, but also think about how that trend might come back and haunt you later.
I laugh because just this week, I save all my presets in Lightroom and I make my own, and I will follow trends occasionally and I'll make presets for the trends, right? So what was interesting is as I was editing photos in the airport, I was noticing some of the presets in my Lightroom on my iPad. I was like, that is dated. Like that was something that was very, very dated. And the part of it that really gets me is sometimes I have an image that would look really good in that, but then it's inconsistent with the rest of the images that I have. And then I'm like, well, damn it. Now I can't even do that in this particular case, right? And I think it's a really hard thing for photographers to work through in like, okay, I found my style, but if you found your style and your style is kind of like the current trending style, and then it goes away, you're kind of a woman without an island, right? You're sort of floating.
You have to reinvent yourself every time a new trend comes through.
Yeah, you have to kind of reinvent that. And I too have been guilty of the super heavy vignette. And I also have been guilty of photographing in a style that would go with a certain brand and then coming back to that years later and having to update website images and going, damn it, why did I make that creative choice on that day? And I think that comes with maturity to recognize the fact that it's okay to maybe stretch a little here and there.
You should also know how to do these things and play with them because they can lead you to new creative endeavors down the line even.
Absolutely. But to also know that if you do all of your images that way, it's going to be a distinctive situation when you get on the other side of that particular trend. So trends are fun, but also should come with a warning label.
Phyllis, do you have any thoughts on trends?
I don't think so, because I don't know. I mean, maybe I am a trendy person. I don't know. I just do me. I don't think I really do trends, but maybe I do. I mean, maybe you might look at my work and say I do. I don't know.
I'm sure there's been a time you've been sucked into trends. Think about the glow that everybody did for a while.
Glamour glow.
Glamour glow. You got sucked into glamour glow trend.
Yeah. It was in the Knit collection. It was cool, you know? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was cool and new. That's it. You learned how to use it, but you weren't afraid to move on from it when you needed to.
Well, I will say, and this goes into starting to what I'm going to talk about, which is editing. Most of my career, I have been a editorial or marketing photographer. Like, that's what I have had to shoot. I've either had to shoot in order to illustrate something that is being done with a horse, training, gear, tack, products, that kind of thing. So I'm shooting for marketing, but it tends to be a very somewhat editorial style. And a lot of my career, my clients have wanted exactly that. Like, they just want documentation of what is going on. And then if I bring some art to that, great. If I don't, that's okay too. They need the documentation part of things. When it comes to editing, a lot of times I don't go a long way with my editing. One thing I will say is that I don't like to take out the imperfections in life, because I, having now done my gestalt work and all of the mental health work that I have done to get myself in a good, stable place, I have learned that life is perfectly imperfect and that I have no control over perfection. Perfection only exists in my imagination. And you know what? That's a great place for it to live. But I also can't stay so attached to it that I judge everything by what I can imagine, because my imagination is pretty damn good. Like, I can imagine all kinds of things, but that's not what happens. And being able to let go of that and embrace reality and understand perfection is a direction, not a destination. So that is such an important mindset shift when it comes to editing your images, particularly of Western lifestyle. We've talked over these last two episodes about story and texture and space and about really truthfully bringing out the soul of the rancher and the ranch and the Western lifestyle and the livestock that lives there. And the truth is that that story is a story of ingenuity. It's a story of use. It's a story of wear and tear. You know, cowboys and cowgirls have their favorite saddle. It's the one that they have worn to where it has their butt print in it. It's the one where the tooling in the leather is not exactly perfect. It's the one with the rubber from a inner tube stretched around the horn so that they're able to dally correctly. It's the rope that fits their personality. It's all of those things that they've used day in and day out that have seen rain and snow and dirt and dust and don't always get a good cleaning. And there's, to me, a huge difference between show Western and ranch Western, because you want that broken in gear. You want that saddle that when you throw your leg over the horse, that your foot just slides right into the stirrup, because that's needed. And in telling that story, I think the photographer has to take that in consideration. And when you get on the other side of it with all of the editing tools that we have today, especially all of the little you just touch something and tell the AI to remove it and it's gone. And it no longer takes you 6 hours to recreate a freaking fence, because the AI, most of the time, can do that for you. It does tend to struggle on occasion. But, you know, I mean, you have the opportunity to fix broken gates, to take the scars off of a horse, to remove the dust from somebody's hat, to change their skin texture, to help eliminate tack imperfections or the knot in a loose horse's mane, or all of those things. But the truth is that the Western lifestyle is full of broken gates and imperfect tack and scars and baling wire and duct tape and electrical tape and ropes that are frayed. And if you remove all of that, you remove the spice and flavor of what you're shooting. So I think it's important to draw that line for yourself to say, life is perfectly imperfect. And I am going to use perfection as a direction, not a destination. That's my two cents.
I think that's important because, like, as a portrait photographer, you feel a lot of pressure to, like, make your human subjects look like as good as possible. And there's so many tools out there that you can basically remove all the features and characteristics from their face and hands and body. And you know what I mean? Like, you have clients that expect that from you. You have clients that want that from you. And it's a very slippery slope. And I've learned a lot of lessons. Personally, I've learned a lot of lessons, but also, like, just being really careful about that and trying to support people loving themselves. And just because we can do it doesn't mean we should, you know, or we need to. So, you know, that's a toughie.
I don't do a lot of portrait work, but I relate my work to work that I'm sending to my publisher for home decor for a mass market. And messy backgrounds don't always equate to pretty art to sell. And I find myself sometimes cleaning up the backgrounds too much in my work that's not going to be sold for art. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, for me, it's hard sometimes to differentiate between the two. And I'm trying hard to do that and let some things go. But it's just hard in my brain to do that sometimes. So.
Sure.
Well, I think we all get a little OCD about it, right? And especially now that tools make it so easy that you can click on something and it can go away. And so it's very, very easy to click those buttons. And it's actually, it triggers OCD, right? Because you want to do it more and more and more. And then you get in the habit of it. And then it becomes really difficult to let something still exist in an image. I think that you have to look at your image and say, is what I am taking out, is that a distraction? Am I removing a distraction from my subject? Or am I trying to create perfection that I imagined versus using perfection as a direction to walk toward? And I think that that is at the discretion of the photographer, right?
And final use, like, how is it going to be used? Like, Phyllis is doing something for art versus something for a magazine versus something for a client's home. Everything has a different, if it has a different purpose, there's going to be different editing needs. And one extreme might not be necessary for the other.
And I also do want to say details do matter. Like, some of these things do matter. I am definitely not advocating for not editing your images at all. And I'm also not advocating for not thinking about it when you're standing there in front of your subject so that, and to me now, I'm lazy. I'm like, can you please take that off of this or do that? Because people have gotten in this habit of saying, oh, you can Photoshop that. And AI has made it so much easier. It's like, oh, you can Photoshop that, that you can AI that. No, I can't. Brush the shavings off the horse, you know?
If it's something easy that can be fixed at the shoot, then yes, absolutely, you need to do that. But like, I just did a newsletter with a before and after edit. I'm thinking about it was a scene in the river, really pretty scene, but there's a white log on the ground that is intersecting my subject's head. And I'm like, I'm going to take it out because for me, that's very distracting.
That is a distraction. It moves the viewer's eye away from the subject. And that's the line you have to draw. But also, by the same token, editing out something that is not distracting just because it's an imperfection in a scene isn't always necessary. And again, you do have to think about the destination of what you're doing. But yeah.
And I hate to say it, you want to sell something too. Like, if you're selling a portrait, something to a portrait client, and she's got, like, I don't know, a love handle that I could have fixed. If I could have had her stand a little straighter, I probably could have gotten rid of it. I want to sell that. I might poke it in. Like, yeah. I'm going to tell you, like, it's something, if I could have fixed it in posing and I just didn't, or I missed it before I show that image, I'm going to fix it.
I will say on the body thing, you know, it's interesting to me. The most disappointing part of my career as a photographer, like, if I had a choice to be able to change one thing about being a photographer, it would be to give everybody the ability to love themselves in photos. Because people are so body critical of how they look that they're unwilling to show who they really are. And that is a modern well, it's probably a modern. I don't know how far back it goes. I've only been here 60 years, but it is such a cultural thing with us to hate how we look. And it's not fair. And it's, I wished it did not live that way.
Yeah. And I'll never forget the time I photographed this woman. And the whole time at the photo shoot, she was like, you're going to slim me in all these pictures, right? You're going to slim me. You got to make me look good. You got to slim me. So when I went through and edited, I did a very gentle smoothing, slimming situation. And then when she saw her picture, she was upset because I didn't slim her. And I'm like, now I'm having to slim the slim, if that makes sense. It's like, don't bite yourself in the butt like that. Like, you really can't.
The client I had years ago that was a realtor, she wanted me to do the same. And I thought I did it tastefully. So I sent the images back to her. And I didn't go overboard. I didn't think she looked that bad to begin with. But when she saw the ones I edited, she was like, oh, now what are they going to think when I get to the location showing and they've seen my card? I look one way and then they see me and I'm like, you know, I'm like, you tell me, you just asked me to do this, you know? So that's why I don't do portrait work anymore.
Yeah. No, but my policy is I don't make any body changes unless it's something I should have caught in posing, like something really simple. I should have caught in posing, like a weird shirt sticking out or something. Like, I don't make any body changes. I don't talk about bodies. If they say, I usually use the line, if when you're going through the pictures, if there's anything that you would love to change or you don't like, tell me what that is. Maybe it's something that we can fix, or maybe it's something I can change in post. But I don't make any comments on it. And then I let them just love their pictures or don't love their pictures. And then we talk about what the things they don't love. And we make changes after that if we need to. But it's a nasty game.
It is. And I do want to say this to the photographers out there when you face this as a photographer with your clients.
Because you will.
You will face it. And I do need you to hear me very clearly when I say this. This is not your problem. This is not your thing to take on. You are not a bad photographer because somebody does not have a healthy image of how they look. And you are not a bad photographer because you can't hit what their definition of perfection for themselves is.
Learn to pose different body types. Like, take the time to learn to pose people and learn about your camera, you know, your lens choices and things that you can do to make people more flattering. That helps. That's going to help your business. It's going to help you make money.
It definitely will. But psychologically, do not take on other people's garbage.
Right. Right. Good one.
We've kind of gotten away from our 101 editing styles that bring out the soul of the ranch.
Yes. Well, we're on 104 now, so we're good. Anyway, we'll wrap this up. We got on our little soapbox for a moment there. So anyway, thank you for joining us for this episode. Come find us online. We're hanging out in all the places. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Cowgirls with Cameras. You can also find us in our private equine photography community where all the cool people are hanging out, which is cowgirlswithcameras.community. So go hang out with us over there. If you want to know how you can join us in an event down the line, head to our website, cowgirlswithcameras.com. We've got all sorts of different ways that you can come to one of our events. We have mentorship opportunities, lots of good stuff on there. And we should have our 2027 list coming out really soon. If you're in the community, you're going to learn about events and have access to join us at those events first. So we hope to see you out there.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cowgirls with Cameras. Don't let the laughter and learning stop here. Join our community on social media and be sure to visit our website for more opportunities to fulfill your photography goals. Head to cowgirlswithcameras.com. That's cowgirlswithcameras.com. See you next time.